Hi there, and welcome to the inaugural Bag and Baggage podcast, coming to you from soggy Southern California. This is Denise Howell. It's January 9th, 2005, and I'm here with my son, Tyler, in the middle of some of the worst storms that I've ever seen in Southern California. So you may hear a bit from Tyler as I record this. You may hear a bit of the rain coming down outside. And you may hear a bit of Tyler's programming that's keeping him occupied right now, which is his favorite Thomas the Tank Engine, which I hope is operating at low enough volume in the background here that I needn't concern myself with the copyright implications of having that audio picked up by this audio. Speaking of copyright, I should go ahead and mention off the bat here that this podcast and future Bag and Baggage podcasts will be covered by a Creative Commons license, specifically the Attribution Non-Commercial 2.0 license. So there you go with that. Today I'm going to talk to you about cell phones, using them to do a podcast, which is what I'm doing here today, losing them, and getting them set up to work with your cellular network when you didn't purchase them from your cellular provider. All of which I've experienced in the last week, and we'll have some comments about that. I'll run through a brief list of podcast resources and let you know how I put together today's podcast and what I consulted in order to do it. I'm very excited to let you know that next week I'm scheduled to do an interview with Wallace Wang, the author of Steal This File Sharing Book. Hopefully we'll do that as a podcast as well and post it up over on my guest blog at the Industry Standard. Finally, I'm going to wrap up today talking about some links from the legal blogosphere and the non-legal blogosphere that have to do with legal issues that I spotted over the course of the last week and that I think are worth checking out. So let's talk about cell phones. I lost my cell phone this last week. Tyler and I were grocery shopping. I headed down to the store with the baby, my keys, my wallet, and my phone, plunked them all in the shopping cart, and unfortunately only the first three of those four items made it home with me. Glad to say that the baby did. Sad to say the phone did not. My old phone was a Sony Ericsson P800, which was an excellent phone. I was really sad to lose it. Had all kinds of nice features on it. So had to begin sort of casting around as to a replacement for that. And I remembered that Adam Curry, in his Daily Source Code podcast early last month, had talked about the fact he discovered that his Sony Ericsson phone, the K700i, had a sound recording feature built into it that not only let you record whatever was going on around the phone and record your memos into the phone, but let you record conversations, you know, regular old telephone conversations. So that's not something that a whole lot of cell phones let you do, as I found out when I started looking around for phones with that feature. And when I went and looked at all the rest of the features of the K700i, I found out that for a good deal less money than the P800 and the successor models to that phone, the P900 and the P910, the K700i has a whole lot of really nice features, including a great camera, also a video camera, calendar, contacts that sync up with iSync on your Mac, and of course all the data functionality too, email, SMS, and internet. It is a GSM phone. So it was basically everything I needed in a smaller package and for less money, and I figured that'd be a great way to go. So I went ahead and ordered it off the Sony Ericsson website, and the Sony Ericsson folks assured me that it should work with my AT&T/Singular account if I just went and got a new SIM card for the phone, which I promptly went and did, and sure enough, that got it up and functioning for voice services, but it's been kind of comical over the last couple of days as I've tried to get the data services operating on the phone as well. The internet, email, and text messaging settings are not in the phone because it's not a branded AT&T Singular phone. And no one at AT&T seems to be able to give me those settings, and no one at Sony Ericsson seems to be able to give them to me either, and they keep pointing back and forth to one another. So I am determined, one way or another, I'm going to get this phone's, at least its email working, so that I can post pictures from the phone directly up to the web without having to offload them to a computer first. But the other thing that this all drove home to me is how badly we are in need of a system, a LoJack type system, to track cell phones when they're lost. As far as I know, nothing like that exists right now. I certainly didn't have that service on my old phone, if something like that does exist. You know, since phones are supposed to be able to find you in an emergency via the 911 system, it seems to me that you should be able to find them when they go missing as well. Maybe this is something that my friends in the digital identity world can put on their list as part of the world of RFID and tracking, and goodness, I'm not quite sure how else you'd go about doing it, but it's certainly something that we need. As long as we keep putting more and more data on these devices, it's going to become more and more important that we be able to control that data when they get separated from us. So far I'm liking the phone a great deal. I like its recording capability. I've listened to a couple of the files that I've recorded as tests, and the quality seems to be okay. Certainly tell me if you think otherwise. I've been playing around with some of the settings in iTunes to make sure I get a file of sufficiently small size and sufficiently good quality. What I've been referring to help me get this podcast up and out there are the current issue of Mac Addict magazine, which has a great article, sort of a step-by-step on podcasting with a bunch of resources included on the disc that accompanies the magazine. Also, the Engadget blog has at least three how-tos, very detailed, of different things that you need to know if you're using a Mac, and the applications that you need to use and how to get them to talk to each other. And I'll go ahead and point you over to all those links in the show notes that accompany this post. Also related to the cell phone issue I was discussing a moment ago, I do recall that Rick Clow over at the TINS weblog had some interesting experiences with AT&T Singular recently as well, and I'll point you over to those. Hopefully the merged entity is going to get its act together one of these days and help us users get the most out of our accounts and our cell phones. I mentioned that I'm going to do this interview with Wallace Wang next week. I'm very excited to talk to Wally. He's written a really interesting book, Steal This File Sharing Book, from No Starch Press. I'm almost done with it. And what I'm taking away from it is that there are a whole host of other ways to do file sharing in addition to the P2P networks that I've sort of always heard about in the background, but never paid much attention to for the reasons that Wally goes into in his book. They're kind of obscure, and some of them are pretty difficult to use. But what keeps striking me as I read through his detailed explanations is that some of these services are bound to become more popular and more widespread as the P2P networks continue to be the focus of the entertainment industry trying to crack down on file sharing. So I hope to do my interview with Wally as a podcast on this very cell phone, and look for links to that on my guest blog at the Industry Standard, and also probably at Bag and Baggage. As far as things going on in the blogosphere that I wanted to mention, Kevin Heller has a great post up at his tech law advisor site that is called Belly Up to the Bar. And Kevin spent a lot of time aggregating and pointing to some of the highlights of the week in the legal blogosphere. I encourage you to go check it out. And if you're interested in picking up the next bar tab, as it were, get in touch with Kevin. He's looking for somebody to possibly volunteer to do that next time. The other thing I wanted to mention you should check out is Doc Searle's post over at the IT Garage entitled, Why Podcasting Isn't Webcasting. I think that this is a fascinating and developing topic. It's something that Doc has talked about a lot, and I'm sure will continue to do. He has a good deal of experience in radio, was following the whole CARP process with the Copyright Office as it unfolded in setting the royalty rates for webcasts. Doc points to Brett Fawcett's post from last week on using RIAA licensed materials in a podcast and how one would go about doing the appropriate licensing for those materials and getting clearance to use them. And Doc's point is that, well, while that's all well and good, it's probably not wise to equate podcasts with webcasts. There are all kinds of differences between the two of them, which should lead to podcasts being treated differently from a regulatory standpoint. And as a footnote here, I'll mention that I did see over at the Engadget blog's coverage of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, that Michael Powell mentioned over there that he could see taking a much more hands-off approach to satellite radio, for example, than FM or AM radio. And podcasting may well fall into that kind of category that justifies a more hands-off approach. But what I was struck by when I read Doc's post was the fact that the copyright considerations don't go away just because something is treated differently for regulatory purposes. One way or another, if you're using copyrighted material on a podcast, you're going to need to make sure that you have the right to do it. And whether it's going through the licensing process that Brett Fawcett described in his podcast, or whether it's using Creative Commons licensed material, or whether it's otherwise clearing the rights with the rights holder, it's certainly something that you want to pay attention to before you go out and post up a podcast that includes something subject to copyright, which includes both lyrics and music and the original recording and cover recordings done subsequently. I've heard a bunch of stuff included in podcasts to date that could well trigger lawsuits, and I know that folks want to avoid those whenever possible, so it's worth paying attention to the material that you're using and making sure that you've got all the rights that you need to be able to be using it. Finally, I'd like to point you over to one of my favorite legal blogger sites, Mad Cane, who's been watching the Alberto Gonzalez hearings this week and watching the grilling that he's been undergoing, and has expressed her thoughts about it in poem. And I emailed her this morning, told her I was going to do the first Bag and Baggage podcast, and asked her if I could read that poem for you, and she said, sure, that sounded like fun. So here we go from Mad. Alberto Gonzalez. He'll obey our treaties. We'll be torture-free, swears Alberto to the Senate, so they'll make him our AG. They're not really relics. It was just a joke. Al was crossing his fingers. Wouldn't want prisoners to croak. So with that, I'll wrap up this podcast. I see that it's... Actually, I can't see how long it is right now because my phone's screensaver has kicked on, but I'm guessing it's somewhere between 10 to 15 minutes long. One thing I'll mention, too, as I was debugging my RSS for this earlier, is that I managed to figure out that the length attribute of the RSS that you need to use to do RSS enclosures refers to the length of the file in bytes. I was a little bit confused about that at first, but managed to pin down the answer to that somewhere on the Internet. So as far as I know, my RSS passes muster, and you should be able to syndicate these podcasts in the future. I really appreciate any feedback that you may have, any suggestions for future podcast content. And until then, this is Denise Howell. Talk to you soon. Bye.